Welcome. Thank you so much for worshiping with us this afternoon. I did some quick research this week on what are the most common dreams or nightmares that Americans experience. Let me know if you guys have ever had any of these nightmares. These are the most common. The first one is pretty unsettling. In the middle of your dream, you're just going about your regular business and your teeth fall out. Has anybody had a dream where their teeth are just falling out? Yeah, I've had that before. It's terrifying. Another one is being chased. People say that they have frequent nightmares that in some form or another involve being chased, feeling threatened. Another one is that you are either failing an exam or you have some homework that's due. I still have those dreams from time to time, and I haven't been in school for over 17 years, but I guess they don't really go away. Another one is a dream where somehow you're flying, and that's the good part of the dream, but then in the middle you start to fall, and it's terrifying that you're crashing down to the earth. I've been having an unsettling dream lately. I've had this at least three times. I want to share it with you because it fits. In this dream, my family has just moved into a really nice house, and we're unpacking all of our things, and for some reason, people are coming over for dinner, so we're kind of rushed, and we want everything to look really nice. And the people are kind of on their way in the house, and we're still unpacking things and trying to be good hosts, and all of a sudden, I notice that even though this is a beautiful house, like brand new, it has the roof of a barn. And like not the roof of a new barn, but like an old dilapidated barn with holes and like water and straw are falling down from the rafters. And my daughter's crying because like bats and owls are flying in. And my wife is mad at me. She's like, how could you have picked out a house that has the roof of a barn? And I didn't control it. That's just the dream that comes out. So what do all these dreams have in common? You got teeth falling out, you're getting chased, you're failing your homework, you're flying and you're falling, you just spent all this money on a house with an insufficient roof. I think each one of these dreams on some level indicate that deep inside of us we have anxiety. We're anxious. We have fears that we forgot to do something. We overlooked something. Misfortune's about to strike, and even our best laid plans leave us vulnerable. This month we've been studying how so many of the Psalms are actually like maps. They're meant to lead us somewhere. They're meant to take one emotion that we experience and show us how to get to a better or a healthier emotion or spiritual state. So if you haven't already, please open up your Bibles to Psalm 139 as we trace how David is showing us how to go from anxiety into a stage of acceptance. It's a song or a poem that maps out how we can go from a state of stress to a state of spiritual surrender. I think it's a psalm that's meant to show us how we can sleep easier at night, something we all need help with from time to time. And I'd like to talk about Psalm 139 in two really quick parts. In section one, I just want to talk about the history or the background or the tone or the progression of this song. And in section two, I want to just draw out two encouragements that I think each one of us can take from Psalm 139. All right, let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about the background or the tone or the outline of Psalm 139. I think sometimes a quick reading makes us feel like a lot of the Psalms are similar and they're all just saying the same thing. That has to do with the fact that they're translated from their original language, but it also has to do with the fact that we rush through when we read and we don't really take the time to map out where it's leading us. So in Psalm 139, some things that I've noticed after some more careful examination are that it's really about the psalmist showing us how he reduces his anxiety. If you skip all the way to the end and you read verses 23 and 24, the conclusion or the resolution is this: search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there are any offensive ways in me and lead me to the way everlasting. In other words, the goal of this kind of exercise of thought that the psalmist is going through is that by remembering these things, and we'll talk about the things that he's having the discipline to remember, God, you're going to reduce or diminish or take away my anxiety. So that kind of brings clarity to the purpose of where the writer is trying to take us. It's the map or the path of how to find calmness or serenity. One commentator wrote this: "This poem is essentially a meditation on God's searching knowledge of our innermost thoughts, on the limitations of our knowledge, but on God's inescapable presence throughout the created world." That's a good summary of what we're going to see here in Psalm 139. Let's talk a little bit about the tone. If verse 7 sounds a little bit familiar to you, when David writes, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I go from your presence?" That's kind of a quote or similar language to the story of Jonah. And of course, Jonah comes to that conclusion, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I go from your presence?" But Jonah kind of comes to that conclusion out of shame. He's made some mistakes. He's tried to escape having to obey God. And then he comes to the realization that you can't escape God. You can't flee from the presence of God. But here in Psalm 139, it's a different tone. It's the same phrase. It's the same idea. But there's not shame. There's delight. Whereas Jonah was seen by God and he sort of regrets the things that he learned in the experience, here David is saying that God sees him all the way to the core, and there's love and acceptance and joy. Have you guys ever had sort of like a benign secret that you've tried to keep from somebody because you didn't think it would make you look the best? And then that person has discovered that about you, and they haven't turned their back on you, and they haven't shamed you. Isn't that a beautiful relational moment to experience? The first couple of years that I was dating my wife, and the first couple of years that we were married, I tried to hide from her, and especially from her mother, the fact that I still played video games. I thought that would be kind of like a distasteful thing for your mother-in-law to know about you. And then on the second or third year that we were married, I don't know how she found out, but my mother-in-law, Jennifer, for my birthday, got me the latest edition of John Madden Football. And at first I was terrified that she knew that, you know, her 24-year-old son-in-law still played video games. But then I breathed a sigh of relief. Like, she knows, and she's okay with it. I don't have to hide my terrible secret anymore, right? I think that's the tone of Psalm 139. David says in verse 6, after five verses of detailing that God has seen everything about him, he then says in verse 6, "And such knowledge is too wonderful for me." Psalm 139 is all about this truth that God sees us, God knows us, God created us, and he loves us, and he accepts us. And that's a really powerful realization. The last thing I want to point out here is how David gets to this place of serenity, despite the anxiety that he's asking God to help him process. And the way that he does that is probably the most significant thing about this particular poem. David uses theology to get him from a place of anxiety to serenity. In other words, he draws out or remembers four really important true things about God, and then having the discipline to think about and to dwell on those true things about God, all of a sudden his anxiety isn't quite so intense anymore. Let's talk about the four things that we kind of see in the outline of Psalm 139 that are also a map that we can follow to have our anxiety taken away. The first one is this: in verses 1 through 6, David details that God is omniscient. God knows all. In verse 3, the literal translation of the Hebrew would be this: "My path and my lair you winnow." And that doesn't make a lot of sense. It's using some kind of old-time agricultural terminology. But to winnow something is to separate the wheat from the chaff. It's to take this agricultural byproduct, to take the wheat, and to shake away the part that's not going to be edible, leaving you just with the grain, leaving you with the good part that you've been working to have. So the literal translation is, "God, my path and my lair, you winnow." In other words, what David is saying is that God has sorted and improved the path that you walk. And that word for lair is actually a word that's only ever used to describe an animal bedding down. So remember how your dog at home kind of takes a little circle and makes sure that the grass is safe before they lay down for a nap? Psalm 139:3 is saying, God, you've sorted and you've improved the path that I'll walk in my future. God, you've sorted and improved the place where I circle and lay down at night. Right, so the first thing that the psalmist is remembering here is that not only is God sorting through and improving our present, but also looking ahead and doing those same things in our future. That's step one. Step two here is we can feel that God has abandoned us, but we need to remember that he never really has. Psalm 139, 11, and 12 says this. It's talking about God's omnipresence. It's talking about how God is everywhere. And one translation I came across said, if I think the darkness and unknown could envelop me, it could not. For there is no darkness in the light of your presence, God. Isn't that beautiful imagery? There's times that we feel abandoned. There's times that we feel that God is not with us. But of course, God could never be in the darkness, because he is light. Wherever he is, there's some degree of light and wisdom in God's presence. And so that's the second thing that the psalmist is remembering here. There's times that we feel that we're in the dark. There's times that we feel that we're unseen. But of course, that's not true, because God's presence is everywhere. The third thing here, and that's in verses 7 to 12. In verses 13 to 18, kind of the third section of this song, we have this reminder that God is not bound by time like we are. God is eternal. God can look at the past and the present and the future in ways that we can't, as we're bound by time. Verses 13 and 14 are probably some of the most well-known and comforting lines of poetry in the whole Bible. For you created my innermost parts. You wove me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am set apart for goodness. Of this I know. Did you guys know that the phrase innermost parts in Hebrew is actually kidneys? It doesn't sound as poetic, does it? God, you created my kidneys. But of course, the kidneys are wound in our abdomen. They're kind of deep in our insides. And so in those days, with the knowledge of anatomy and the human body, it was thought of that in our deepest guts, that's where our conscience lies. You know, we think of love coming from our heart. And they thought of, in your innermost parts, that was your conscience. In other words, this is the poet's way of saying, everything about me that determines my choices and my future was created and put in place by you, God. It really is poetic. It really is beautiful. So step three of Psalm 139 is the poet reminding themselves that in the past, God created your future because he's eternal and he's not bound by the constraints that we are. And then the fourth part of the outline here in verses 19 to 24 is this. Not only are these three things true about God, but God hears our prayers and he intercedes. He's personal. He doesn't just know everything. He's not just everywhere. He's not only eternal, but that God is personally interceding and involved in our lives. So it's in these final lines in the fourth part here that the writer goes from a state of anxiety and fear into a state of serenity. And it's because the psalmist is able to surrender to God's control, he's able to do that by remembering that this God who's sovereign and omnipresent and eternal is also personally involved in our affairs. So that's kind of the outline or the progression of Psalm 139. And the last thing I wanted to do today was just draw out two really transformative, encouraging things that I think we can take from this song and carry with us in the weeks ahead that are really beautiful. First one is this. The writer of Psalm 139 is inferring that God knows everything about you and still maintains a tender softness and affection to you. Let me say that again. What Psalm 139 is really about is that God knows everything about you, everything about me, but he still maintains a tender softness and affection towards us. And I want to talk about that for just a few minutes. I think there's a significance to what we believe about ourselves based on the components that we think make up who we are. Start with kind of a silly example. There used to be this poem that was on a poster in one of my classrooms when I was a really little kid, and you've probably heard it before. It says this: "What are little boys made of? Frogs and snails and puppy dog tails. This is what little boys are made of. What are girls made of? Sugar and spice and all things nice." Have you guys heard that poem before? And I just remember, like, man, boys are made out of gross things. Like girls are sugar and spice and everything nice. And no wonder that boys are trouble, because they're just made out of, like, the parts of gross amphibians or whatever. I think another image comes from those Lord of the Ring movies. I don't know if you guys have ever seen The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings. And there's these scenes where the evil creatures are creating just a vile army of just like disgusting creatures. They call them orcs, and they don't really explain how they're made, but it's like underground, and there's this dark magic, and there's like debris that's getting burned, and there's all this dirt and oil. And then out of that cauldron come this army of disgusting creatures. And I just share those examples because sometimes when we're at our lowest point, we think the same thing. We think of our sin, we think of our mistakes, we think of our self-defeating behaviors, and we think to ourselves in our secret thoughts, how could God love me when I'm made up of all these mistakes and unfortunate things? But what's so beautiful about Psalm 139 is in verses 11 and 12, the songwriter is saying, "I used to be enveloped in anxious darkness." It specifically says that anxious darkness was what I used to be clothed in. And then that imagery gets replaced in verses 13 and 14 and 15 with this idea that God wove us. God knitted us. Does anybody here knit? Does anybody have any blankets or anything soft that was made for them by a loved one? We don't take things that were knit. We don't take an afghan. We don't take a soft blanket and say, "Oh, it's cutting me. It's dirty. It's sharp." Those are things that cover us. Those are things that are cozy. Those are things that we hold near and dear and close to us. And what's so beautiful about Psalm 139 is that David is saying, "I used to be clothed or covered in the dark unknown of anxiety. But as I think these things that are true about God, I remember that a greater truth is that I was knit together in my mother's womb." That ominous and anxious darkness that clothed us is replaced by a soft yarn. And of course, poets choose their imagery and their sensory details very carefully. So the next time that you guys feel yourself overcome by anxiousness, the next time you have a dream that your teeth are falling out or you're falling from the sky or like bugs and bats are getting into your house, I want you to remember that the main thrust of Psalm 119 is that you're, in God's eyes, not a product of your insecurities and your mistakes. Rather, you're loved by a knowing, all-powerful, eternal, personal God who wants to rip away that anxious fabric and remind us that you're exactly what He created you to be. And you're intact. You're just as you were intended. One of my favorite verses also talks about how we're created, and that's Ephesians 2:10. And Ephesians 2:10 says, "You are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, prepared in advance for you to do." In other words, not only were we knit together in our mother's womb, but part of that design also foreknew how we would best respond to Jesus and how we would best fit and represent Jesus. And I think that's so beautiful. So the first transformative encouragement from Psalm 139 is that God replaces the anxiety and the darkness that envelops us, and He reveals that we're exactly as He intended us to be. You are as God intends. You're known, you're intact, and you're created in Christ. I think that's such a beautiful encouragement. And let's wrap up with this. The second thing that I think makes Psalm 139 so distinct is this. It has kind of another theme to it, which is this. The poet is sort of saying that I don't have to be anxious, I don't have to be afraid, because mistakes and injustice are impossible because God is in all places. Wouldn't you agree that a source of our anxiety is that something misfortunate is going to happen? We're going to fall through the cracks. Something unfair is going to happen to us just because of bad timing, being in the wrong place at the right time, not being as important as something else that's occurring at the same time. And what the poet is reminding us here is that that's not true, because God is everywhere. We're never outside of His gaze. We're never outside of His control. Of course, unfortunate things will happen, but God will use those for good because He is all-knowing. He sees what's occurring. Let me read verses 9 to 12 because I think they're so powerful and so encouraging. Psalm 139, 9 to 12 says this: "If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light becomes night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." I think David is just so beautifully remembering not only his dark times when he felt abandoned, but how God used those things for good, how God was always with him. And that remembrance, that truth, is helping him find trust and security in the particular dark time that he wrote this. "Even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." My first job as a pastor was as a youth pastor, and it kind of spanned the 2000s. And so I kind of had this funny observation that, like, before the year 2007, when the kids in your cabin snuck out at night and your job as the camp counselor or the youth pastor was to go find them, it was pretty tricky, like, before the year 2007. But that was the year where basically everybody got smartphones. And so after 2007, if it was like midnight and someone snuck out of your cabin and you had to go find them, it was so easy because you could just see the light of their phone, like, in the woods, right? It became like there was suddenly no thing as darkness with teenagers, because they couldn't go more than 1 minute without being on their phone. And then you're like, all right, Brandon, come back to the cabin, right? Made it a little bit easier. Here's probably a better illustration. When I was in high school, my mom worked for a local newspaper, and so she got me a job as a high school basketball reporter. And so my job was really easy. I would just kind of drive to these neighboring towns. I'd sit in the gym. I'd write down the scores, and then I'd call them in, and you'd get like $25-$30. And there was this one time where I had to go to a game that was on the west side of Chicago, and I was a little bit nervous. I'd never driven by myself that far away from home, and my dad just kind of explained that the interstate went right through our town, and so basically anytime we went somewhere, we were on that interstate, and he just kind of explained to me, all you got to do is keep your bearings as you get to the school. It's pretty close to the interstate. Find your way back on, and you'll be home in no time. So I watched the game and called in the score, jumped on the interstate, and I was driving, and I was driving, and I was driving, and all of a sudden, I didn't recognize anything. Not the name of the towns, not the stores, not the schools or anything. And I was getting pretty nervous. It was really late at night. Like, I wasn't even in Chicago anymore. Like, I could see the lights of Chicago, and I had no idea where I was. And speaking of cell phones, this was right when cell phones originally came out. And I remember that I had it because part of the job is calling in the scores to the editors of the paper. So I called home and I told my dad I had no idea where I was. And he told me to just kind of list some of the things that I saw. And he's just like, son, you did get on the interstate and you did drive till you found something familiar. But the familiar thing that you found was Indiana. Like, you're in Indiana. So hop back on, and instead of going east, you need to go west. And eventually you'll find things that are familiar. And so that guiding encouragement got me back to the town that I grew up in. What Psalm 139 is all about is that even in your darkness, even in your most vulnerable place, there's nowhere that God is not. There's nowhere that God doesn't see. And so that guidance, even at our most vulnerable, even at our most lost, brings us back to where we're supposed to be. I think the second transformative encouragement from Psalm 139 is that God is everywhere and His hand guides us. So this week I want you to lean into that. There's no darkness, for darkness as is light to God. So I'd like to invite the worship team to come forward and wrap up our service with a final song or two. Let me offer this as a summary statement. Psalm 139 has one or two of the Bible's most comforting images, and it offers us a path from the anxiousness that we inevitably feel from time to time, and the path from that to serenity, the path from that anxiety to trust, is to remember that that God knows everything. God is eternal. God is for us. And with those things true, our anxiousness melts away. David uses the attributes of God as a means of changing his anxious outlook, and Psalm 139 offers a path for us to do that as well.